Hi, everybody. I'm Lacey.
I'm Bailey.
I'm Drew.
And we're sarcastic, so let's get sinister.
I'm eating my dinner.
Oh, nice. What do you got?
I'm not.
Chinese food.
We went to All You Can Eat Wings tonight, where we went on Sunday to see if we could make it worth it. And we did, and I'm so uncomfortable.
Were you allowed to try different flavors?
Yes. So the first wave that came out, she told us it was 10, and then it was 12. So I don't know if she told us the wrong number, if they were like, have extras. But you could get two different flavors. So the first round, we got different things every time so we could try them all. I got garlic parm hot and horseradish hot. And he got honey sriracha and Old Bay, which was a dry rub. And then the second round, like every subsequent round, is six. So then for my next round, I got sweet and spicy. And he got the barbecue jerk, which I think it was what Bailey had the other day.
Oh, yeah, those were good.
Yeah, we didn't make it past that.
When they give you like a bunch of little, we did it at your bachelorette flight? Party. A flight. They should do flights of wings so you can try different sauces.
That's fun. The diner over here has a pancake flight. Oh, I told you guys that the one day and you weren't interested.
Yeah, because like how many different flavors of pancakes are there?
I had
three. I'm not into pancakes like that.
Yeah, that's fair.
Hot take. I would really divide like... our listeners.
The there's a Mexican restaurant out by me that has like margarita flights.
I like that.
I like that kind of flight.
I like the alcoholic flight.
It's a nice and flight.
Also a wing flight. I like a flight if I need to try different flavors to know what I like.
I also enjoy airline flights. Going to new places. Those are fun.
Yes.
I don't take a lot of those. I find airports stressful.
Did yes. anyone just hear what Pat said?
No.
No, I just heard noise.
Thank God.
Oh no.
Well, he just said like he's on games and he says like the weirdest shit.
Oh. I just realized I had my microphone like over
super
there.
Super far away.
Closer, yeah. All right, do we have anything else for the good of the order?
No, I just thought it was it.
I don't think so.
Cool. Drew, did you get my PowerPoint?
Yes.
I don't have a lot on it. I'm coming to you guys with an Urban Legends episode. I know. I haven't done one in a while.
This will be fun because next week's episode is Disturbing Destinations.
Oh, that's a little theme. Yeah. Theme meets.
I also feel like urban legends are fun to make fun of, which is kind of like the sarcastic thing.
Yeah.
I distinctly remember the Jersey Devil being fun to mock.
That was like one of my favorites.
What was the one with he was like a weird goat?
Jersey Devil. The Devil.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah. And then there was the one that she's the Lady of the Lake or something.
Yeah. In Presque Isle.
Yeah.
Near Erie,
best illustration.
Right?
Yeah. Best illustration ever.
What her name is. But yeah, and then there was the Bus to Nowhere, which just picks people up and they hang out for a while and they get off. And like, wow. I've made a decision about my life.
And I was convinced that that was just a serial killer.
Yes.
Could have been.
So what? That was like the Urban Legends PA, where in
that was a local version. Today we're going to Arizona.
Ooh.
Yes, and I've got three for us again because it feels nice.
I've never been to Arizona.
Me neither.
Arizona. I would go back with you.
Okay, what are we going to do?
I feel like...
Well, maybe first we can go to Slaughterhouse Canyon.
Oh.
Oh. Can you go? You
Drew,
already
were you
said
gonna
you
say
don't
something
do a lot
before
of
I dove
flights.
into the story?
No, I was gonna say, I feel like Bailey does most of the international travel of the group. Lacey does a lot of continental travel. And I don't.
You travel across our state.
I have kids and makes it hard to travel.
We're gonna do a little bit of traveling this fall for the podcast.
Hopefully.
We haven't had any, we don't have anything booked.
That's okay. Our listeners will find out about that when we get
closer.
Yeah,
don't make any promises, Lacey.
I'll be doing traveling next week.
Going to Canada.
Canada.
Oh yeah, aren't you going to Banff?
I am.
Ugh. So good. Let's come back to Arizona. Let's head on over to Slaughterhouse Canyon. So, Slaughterhouse Canyon, sometimes called Luna's Canyon, is located outside Kingman, Arizona. So most people know that about the California Gold Rush, which started around 1848, right? That's a thing that we know. Not everybody knows that Arizona also had its own gold rush. So after several years in California, it was getting more and more rare to find gold. Prospectors began branching out to other areas of the American West. After the Mexican-American War ended in 1848, the U.S. had gained some new territory, including Arizona, which at the time was actually part of New Mexico. Drew.
What exactly is a prospector?
They're out there looking for gold. They're looking for their prospects. Their prospects.
He's a cartoon.
From Toy Story?
Yeah.
Hold on.
But, like, are they, like, the ones, like, with the pickaxes?
Yeah.
They can be. So I just Googled because I wasn't actually sure. So this is actually, I'm glad you said that, because I use prospector and miner kind of interchangeably in this.
Mm-hmm.
And when you said that, I was like, I wonder if there's actually a difference. So miners
are in the mines.
Here's what this says. Essentially, miners seek to explore and exploit and to research areas within a domain of knowledge. Prospectors set their sights beyond existing mines. So miners are going in the mines and prospectors are out where there aren't the mines.
So prospectors are like the head miner who sends people into the mines. But
so
it's
like a supervisor.
Over there might be more mines.
Yeah, so prospector would be like, hey, we hit on some gold here. There's going to be more. Let's look for gold here. And the miners are like, all right, we're going to go into this mine. So as I use those terms interchangeably for the story, they're the same thing.
But what are we exactly talking about?
The gold rush.
Okay, so like I would assume that we are talking about a prospector then.
Probably prospector.
If they were going to Arizona looking for the mine.
Yes.
Good.
So in 1858, an expedition found a gold deposit on the Gila River, and Arizona's gold rush began. By the 1860s, large deposits of gold were being found in the Bradshaw Mountains. Settlements began popping up in different areas along the Gila and Colorado rivers, some of which ended up abandoned entirely when the rivers shifted or the gold ran out. One of these gold rush settlements, Kingman, was founded in 1882. In 1883, a railroad line was built through the town, bringing a wave of desperate prospectors and their families. One such man settled with his wife, Luna, and their children into a shack along the riverbed in the canyon outside Kingman. Times were tough. There wasn't much gold left to find by this point, and the focus had shifted to silver. This man had big dreams, and he wanted to earn enough wealth to give his family an easy life. Even though things weren't looking good for the prospectors, and so many families were struggling, he kept heading out in the desperate hope that this time he would strike it rich. The man would leave his family for days, sometimes weeks at a time, to head into the mountains. When he returned, he would bring enough food to last the family until his next return. His family was completely dependent upon him. One day, the man got ready for his next trip, kissed his wife and children goodbye, and headed out. As the days passed, Luna waited anxiously for his return. As days turned to weeks, she was filled with fear. She could do nothing but watch their food supply dwindle as she prayed for his return. But he never did. As time marched on, she stretched the rations as best she could, giving only scraps to her starving children until even the scraps were gone. She was terrified as she wondered what had happened to her husband. Had he gotten sick? Had he been murdered? Had there been an accident? Had he just abandoned them? Between her fear for her husband, her own hunger, and the constant cries of her starving children echoing off the canyon walls, Luna descended into madness. One night, a storm raged. As her children screamed and begged for something to ease their hunger, Luna slipped into her wedding dress, picked up an axe, and murdered her children. When she was finished, she cut them into pieces, covering her wedding dress and the walls of her family's little shack in blood. She carried the pieces outside, threw them into the river, and collapsed, wailing as they sank. She laid in the pouring rain, screaming and crying until she died of starvation the next morning. If you walk in or around the canyon on a stormy night, you can hear the hysterical sounds of the heartbroken mother.
Did you write that?
I did. I wanted to make it a little dramatic.
Yeah, that was magical.
Thank you.
I thought you were reading from like a novel.
Oh. No, I didn't. Now, did the legend sound familiar at all?
I feel like I've heard stories of moms killing their kids and then wait. Crybaby, is it Crybaby Bridge?
Could be. There's so many.
What does La Llorona do?
La Llorona, woman in white, the weeping woman. It's a version of that legend.
I would like to say it's La Llorona.
Okay, well, I take Spanish and I got it right, so fuck off.
Llorona.
No, but I got it right, so what do I get?
I said Crybaby Bridge.
That's not right, though.
How do you know?
Because there's so many versions of Crybaby Bridge.
Look at her Googling so fast.
You just hear the typing away.
Is that MPA?
Crybaby Bridge? I mean, we've got one of them.
Yeah. I'm sure they're all over.
Yeah.
The bridge is allegedly a crybaby bridge where a young woman killed her child and then herself. Her cries still can be heard at night.
Mm-hmm.
So if every state has a crybaby bridge, how am I wrong?
Because that's not the legend she just said.
How is it different? She killed her babies. And then died.
Where was there a bridge in that legend she just said?
Okay, sorry.
So the legend,
I didn't know that we needed to be specific about all of the components.
The legend of Slaughterhouse Canyon seems to have drifted into existence sometime in the 1970s, and there's no documented evidence of the tale. It's believed to be a version of La Llorona, or the Woman in White. There's a large Hispanic population in Arizona, and they think that it may have just drifted up from Mexico. I really enjoy women in white type legends. I like those stories, and I think they're especially scary to me because they're believable. Like, in this is the first one I heard where the woman killed her kids because, like, they were starving and she snapped. Usually it's, like, her husband cheated on her and she snaps and kills her kids, something along those lines. Yeah. But I think it's really believable for a mom under mom stress to snap and do something drastic. And I think that's why I like those stories, because they're believable and it makes it scarier to me.
In my next episode, there is a woman in white.
That's fun. Aw. We didn't plan it.
I didn't follow up any more details because I'm really like not interested in babies dying. But
that's fair.
Thank you. I saw in the news like this mom took her 2-year-old out to like a pond that was across the street and drowned her because she wouldn't leave her alone.
A 2-year-old?
I believe it was a 2-year-old.
Oh.
I feel like it's weird to become a mom and not know that your toddlers might not leave you alone sometimes.
I feel like adoption is always an option, but you know.
They have those boxes at the firehouses.
You rhymed. We didn't have a box.
Yeah.
Oh,
Anyway, way to bring the story down, Drew.
sorry. It was in June of this year in New Jersey.
It's less fun because it's real.
So close by.
So, that's the legend of Slaughterhouse Canyon. Sometimes called Luna's Canyon, but I like Slaughterhouse for, I think,
But like,
obvious reasons.
she got a whole canyon.
That's
That's
nice.
cool. How
Yeah, and
many kids
Canyon's
does
still
she
there.
have?
You can hike down into Slaughterhouse Canyon and everything. There's like an abandoned, it's not the shack, but there is an abandoned house down there from some like miner who did well and built a house and then abandoned his house.
Probably because of the ghost.
He couldn't stand the screaming.
It would keep you up at night, I imagine.
People gotta work.
Yeah.
All right. So, you guys have heard of Bigfoot.
No.
Who?
Did you know that Arizona has their own Bigfoot?
How do we know that Bigfoot doesn't just like vacation there?
Yeah.
Maybe.
I'm just
So,
saying, like,
do they just have like a
like,
different word for Bigfoot?
he is the Mogollon Monster. How do you feel that?
I
I
don't
think that they're just
You
one
like
of their
that?
own thing. So
You
we are heading
can
to the Mogollon Rim region, where the Mogollon Monster resides. He is Arizona's Bigfoot. The Mogollon Monster is described as being over 7 feet tall and is covered in long black or reddish brown hair. He has large red eyes. The monster has a terrible smell, reminiscent of dead fish or a skunk with body odor. It's nocturnal, often aggressive, and leaves footprints nearly 2 feet long.
Did you say a skunk with body odor or
Yes, to make
like.
it extra awful. Like you picture
Okay.
somebody with awful body odor, but now pretend they're a skunk.
Got it.
That's Mogollon. The monster attempts to mimic the noises of wildlife in order to blend in. However, people who live in or visit the Mogollon Rim have said they can tell the difference. The creature lets out blood-curdling screams, sounding like a woman in distress. Typically, just before an encounter, the woods around you will go silent. The first sighting of the Mogollon Monster occurred in the Grand Canyon, which is north of the Mogollon Rim region, 1903. So you can see in this picture here, I'm so tired of saying this word already. The Mogollon Rim. This first sighting of him was up in the Grand Canyon, the first and only Grand Canyon sighting. It was actually reported in the Arizona Republic. So, in an interview with the Arizona Republic, a man identified as I.W. Stevens said that he had seen, quote, a humanoid creature with long white hair and a matted beard that reached to its knees. Stevens said the creature had long claws on talon-like fingers and wasn't wearing any clothing, which feels like a weird distinction to make. I guess just to extra prove it wasn't a person. Stevens reported that the creature charged him wielding a club, but was distracted by a mountain lion with two cubs on a ledge above them. Stevens then turned and shot the mountain lion. I'll come back to that, which caused the monster to run away. He raced back down to the river. When he got in his boat, he looked back to see the monster feasting on all three mountain lions. He yelled at it from the relative safety of his boat, and it gave an unearthly scream in response. So here's my problem. You're faced with a humanoid creature charging you with a club, and when it gets distracted, you turn and shoot the mountain lion instead of shooting the humanoid creature with a club that's charging you.
Well,
I think that's a
'cause
weird choice.
How many times are you in that situation, though?
I mean, I never have been. I've never have
Well,
been,
there
and
you go.
that's
You
fair.
can't judge.
I can't, you
He was frozen in fear because he had never seen a creature that big before.
He hadn't.
But then he saw the mountain lion. He was like, I know what to do with that. Boom. And
Yeah.
then there you go.
Yeah. So this is the first reported sighting of the monster. In the mid-1940s, Don Davis, then a 13-year-old boy, was on a Boy Scout trip near Payson, Arizona. He was dozing outside of his tent when he woke up because he heard something shuffling around the campsite. When he opened his eyes, he saw a large, hairy creature with expressionless eyes. In his account, the monster had some hair along the sides of his face, but no beard. He also described the monster as having a very square head. This was emphasized several times. Davis would grow up to become a cryptozoologist.
It's not a real
thing. Do you think, like, what if he could read? And he was, like, reading people, like, talking shit about him. What if he was just, like, a regular guy who just happened to be tall?
And was big and hairy.
And yeah.
Yeah.
And people were like, oh, my God, he smelled so bad.
He had a big square head.
I would scream at them, too.
My feelings would be hurt.
Yeah.
White River resident Marjorie Grimes claimed to have seen the monster several times between 1982 and 2004. Her description was of a black, tall creature taking enormous strides. White River, Arizona is located on the Fort Apache Indian Reservation. And Marjorie is not the only resident who reported sightings on the reservation. Tribal Police Lieutenant Ray Burnett reported that they would receive calls about this creature looking through people's windows. And the calls were from citizens who he trusted, who he said were not the type to involve themselves with hoaxes.
No, a creepy peeping Tom. No, thanks. Nope.
Yeah, I would rather see it in the freaking woods than see it looking through the window of my house.
Well, because like, it's just like, what do? Like, lock your door.
Yeah. This big giant thing. Plus, once it finds your house, like, it knows that that's your house. You know what I mean? If you see it in the woods, you can just go home.
I mean, they can follow. Yeah,
I don't like that.
But, like, still.
Yeah. In 2014, a sociology student posted online that she saw a troll-looking creature while hiking near Payson. This creature was humanoid and had reddish eyes, but no hair. It had no expression on its face, and when it saw her, it took off running. As I read that, I was thinking about Drew saying that, what if it's just a person and it reads the stuff? And I'm like, how rude to call it a troll-looking creature.
Yeah.
Imagine reading that about you. No wonder it doesn't want to be around people.
That was right after he shaved, and he thought, maybe people will like me better if I'm not so hairy.
Maybe this will be better.
Yeah. And then she, like, screamed, oh my god, it's a troll! So that's why it took off.
And then cried. There are a few origin stories for the Mogollon Monster. These stories include a Native American bent on revenge against white settlers, a cast-out chief wanting to scare his former clan, a pioneer who escaped an attack by Native Americans but was cursed and went insane. Despite the variety of monster origin stories and the many sightings, most scientists today believe the Mogollon Monster is simply a hoax.
I would agree. But
has he heard anyone?
Know, who knows?
No.
Why
there are people say that, and that was, he's labeled as aggressive, but like he charged the very first guy who saw him. But other than that, it seems like he would run when he encounters people. So I think they just wanted him to be aggressive.
Maybe
and screams, charged. But like so many things scream, you know.
I mean, yeah.
Maybe he charged the first guy because he was like, oh, a friend. And then based on how that interaction went, he was like,
he saw that guy shoot that mountain lion. He was like, oh, fuck.
Yeah, he's like, I'm just going to keep my distance from people.
Yeah.
And that's why he runs.
Yeah.
Maybe he just likes running.
But the origin story of the guy wanting revenge, that doesn't, he's not hurting anybody. Leave him alone.
Yeah. I feel like if it was leaving bodies in its wake, some of these stories might make more sense.
Exactly.
All right. Ready for the next one?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. The next one is called The Red Ghost of Arizona.
Does he have a camel?
It certainly looks like a camel. Okay. Arizona. So now we're moving to Eagle Creek in southeastern Arizona. In 1883, two neighboring cattle ranchers headed out. Before I even start, I just want to say, there's no evidence that the story in Slaughterhouse Canyon is true. We think it's evolved from, like, a woman in white thing. Mogollon Monster, it's Arizona's Bigfoot. There's no real evidence of it. The Red Ghost was a real thing.
No, I was going to say, I feel like we're leading up to this being real.
Yeah. Okay, so in 1883, two neighboring cattle ranchers headed out together to check on their cattle. They lived in an area where they did have to worry about attacks from Native Americans, so they would head out every once in a while, make sure all their stuff, all their animals were where they belonged and whatever. Their wives spent that day together watching their children. One of the women left during the day to go get water from the spring outside, which was several yards from the house. After a few moments, the woman inside the house heard loud barking and then a long, loud scream. She ran to the window and looked out to see a huge reddish-colored beast that seemed to have a devilish-looking creature riding it. She locked the door and prayed desperately until her husband came home. She just abandoned her friend outside.
Yeah, I was gonna say. She's like, well,
I don't know what that was, but I'm not going out. When the men returned,
it's like the smart move to make in a scary movie.
When the men returned that night, she told them what they'd seen. They lit torches and headed to the spring, only to find the other woman's trampled body, surrounded by hoof prints twice the size of their horses' prints. Following the footprints as far as they could, the men found a clump of red hair in a bush. The woman's body was in such a terrible state that the coroner suspected she may have been beaten to death, but eventually called it death in some manner unknown. This was reported in the Mojave County Miner, a newspaper in Kingman, Arizona. Just days later, a group of miners were woken up in the middle of the night. They'd been looking for gold in Chase's Creek, several miles northeast of Eagle Creek. They were awakened by the sound of a large beast crashing through their campsite. The men emerged from their tent in time to see what seemed like an impossibly huge horse go running off. They were unable to identify it, but the next day they found tufts of red hair around the site, along with huge hoof prints along the creek bed. Not long after that, the creature was spotted again and left two knocked over wagons in its wake. It was described as being red as the fires of hell. Stories spread quickly after this. The beast was said to have killed and eaten a grizzly bear. It was said to disappear into thin air while being chased. Although the tales grew taller, they all agreed that this monster had some type of devil creature on its back. A few months after the creature was first spotted, rancher Cyrus Hamblin was out hunting for any cattle that may have strayed from his herd. He climbed a ridge to get a better look around and spotted a huge reddish animal moving through the brush across the ravine below. Although he was alarmed, he held still and stayed in place to get a better look. As the animal made its way to a more open space, Hamblin realized what he was looking at, a camel. Now, you're probably wondering why the hell a camel would be wandering around Arizona.
Camels aren't red.
So, well, this one was the Red Ghost.
Unless he was bloody. Also, real
Or
quick.
like a reddish brown,
Real quick, though the tails grew taller, who are you trying to impress?
My audience.
She's trying to get a new job or something.
I did hear that and I just glossed over it.
I was already on a roll from writing my
I didn't want to give her more
Slaughterhouse Canyon. Oh
I
my
tucked it
gosh.
away in my head and I was like, I'm gonna bring that up later.
I did Slaughterhouse Canyon and this one in one day and later came back and did the Mogollon Monster and then I just reordered them and I feel like you could tell that by the way that I wrote them.
It just seems like you are trying to write a book or something.
It seems very theatrical.
Oh, so
I'll sell my
dramatic.
and I'm just trying to learn about urban legends. Like,
Ooh.
there's no need for the theatrics.
It's too late. It's happening. Let me tell you about the camel in Arizona. So, during westward expansion of the US, the military was exploring ways to make transportation easier and more effective, transportation of goods. In 1855, Secretary of War Jefferson Davis approved an experiment that would come to be known as the Camel Corps. I had
Where the
never heard of this
fuck did we
before.
get camels from?
Mediterranean. 70. We got 70 camels. They were brought and transported to the US to basically use as pack animals. When the Civil War started, however, the project was abandoned, and the camels were either sold off or just abandoned into the desert outside of California. So Hamblin had spent several years in the desert region near the California border, so he had seen some of these camels wandering the wilderness before. So he knew what it was. He thought it was unusual for it to be out this far into Arizona, but it wasn't out of the realm of possibility it would have wandered this way in this arid climate. So he wasn't disturbed by the sight of the animal, but something about the shape of it seemed wrong. After studying it for a while, he realized what it was. This camel seemed to be carrying a corpse on its back. Hamlin's reputation was so solid that nobody doubted he had indeed seen a camel, and that this was the red ghost they had been hearing so much about. In fact, the tall tale seemed to pick up after this. However, almost everybody had a hard time believing that the devilish creature on the ghost's back was a corpse. They figured that Hamlin had simply confused the animal's hump with a body. A few years later...
That's a hard thing to do, but okay. Yeah,
they were like, well, he was at a little bit of a distance. You don't see camels every day.
He's probably dehydrated, like...
Yeah. So a few years later, a group of prospectors spotted the red ghost in the distance, and they shot at it, as you do when you see a camel.
Mm-hmm.
It bolted, and they saw something fall to the ground. Oh. They went to investigate and discovered a human skull with some hair and flesh still attached. At this point, it was clear that the devil on the ghost's back was indeed a human skeleton. Over the years, the legend of the ghost grew as its rider fell off in pieces. So, who was the rider of the red ghost?
I don't think we'll ever know.
Felt it was a prospector who had bought or stolen one of these camels. Dying of thirst, he strapped himself to the camel, hoping it would bring him to water. Some say a soldier was in the early stages of learning to ride the camel when it bolted into the wilderness, got lost, and the soldier eventually died of starvation on the beast's back. Still others believe that the creature's rider may have had a heart attack or other medical incident and just died while riding. In 1893, a farmer named Mizzou Hastings looked out his window one morning and discovered the red ghost eating its way through his turnip patch. He aimed through the window and killed the camel. There was no longer any...
Who loves turnips so much that they have a full-ass, like, area in their garden?
Oh, people surviving in the 1890s. In Arizona.
Okay.
So there was no longer any remnants of the dead rider, but the straps that would have held the rider on were still there. In some places, they were embedded deeply in the camel's skin, and it was scarred wherever they were. Examination of these straps found that it would have been impossible for them to be tied that way by somebody riding the camel. This means that the red ghost rider had been strapped to the creature by somebody else, and we have no way of knowing if they were alive or dead when they were put there.
I feel like it could have been like a form of torture.
Mm-hmm.
Like send him out into the desert tied to a camel and he'll just a slow death.
I haven't heard of that torture, that type of torture.
Well, it may have.
I haven't either, but you know, you got to get creative when you're in the 1800s in Arizona.
I'm sure there were scorpions back then. You could have just used one of those.
Yeah, but this one's so, this is so much more creative.
Caught a scorpion and then threw it at somebody?
No, like captured like 100 of them, put someone in a box, chained down, and just like fear factored it. Just
you're right. Threw, that's like, much more... more simple than just strapping somebody to the back of the camel and let him go.
Thank you for agreeing with me.
Isn't that crazy?
So now the camel is dead. So yes. Wait, hold on.
Mizzou
so
the camel, shot it.
The camel was like living its life still?
It was just out there in the wilds, occasionally came across people, and it was violent when it encountered people. And one of the things I read was that when they were training with these camels, the guys, like the soldiers who typically rode mules and horses, really hated the camels because you could not make them do shit they didn't want to do.
Hmm.
And they would spit on them. You know how camels will spit, right? So these guys who were used to just bullying their horses and their mules, they were actually called mule skinners because of how well they could whip their animals. They had such a hard time getting the camels to do anything they didn't want to do, and they freaking hated the camels. So there was also, you know, there's this, was the person alive when they were put up there? Were they dead already? But also they pointed out it would have also sucked for the camel to have this weight strapped on him with the straps in his skin. So it could have also been one of these people from like the army who just hated the fucking camels.
Or I feel like Especially back then, like you just didn't care about the camel.
Right. It was just an animal to them. So they could have been like, I hate this fucking guy from my platoon and I hate these camels. I'm gonna kill two birds with one stone. And that would have also explained why the camel was so aggressive towards people, because it had dealt with people being aggressive toward it before.
And it was like
It's in
probably,
pain because it's hauling this load around.
yeah, hungry, tired.
Yeah. So, unrelated to the actual legend, I learned while researching this that the whole camels can store extra water in their hump thing has been like debunked within the
Yeah.
last 10 years. I didn't know that.
Oh.
And it was like the old beliefs, but I was like, what do you mean old beliefs? This is my belief until right now. Yeah, they think that they are more drought tolerant, so they can still go, that's why they can go longer without drinking, but like they don't just store water in their hump.
I didn't know that that was like a thing that adults believed.
Here I am.
Like, I thought it was kind of like something that like kids, solely children, thought was true. Like
No, July
kids
23rd,
in a belief.
2024. Can you not make her feel any shittier? Lacey learned.
I was gonna list some things that only children believe.
What?
That quicksand is a problem that we often will
They made
run.
it sound like it was gonna be one, you
Yeah.
know?
Camels store water in their hump. Quicksand is around every corner. The tooth fairy is real.
I would also like to say these pictures are like spooky red ghost pictures, but I just Googled red camel just to see like what it came up with, and like the camel doesn't look big enough in these pictures. Like if it's one of these big bastards, they're big and scary. Look at that guy.
Look at this guy.
Look how massive that thing is. So
So
anyway, that's
it's
kind of cute.
is red camel like a specific breed?
Probably.
Okay. Fun.
So those are some urban legends for you guys,
From
straight from
Arizona.
Arizona.
If we have any listeners in Arizona and you wanted to share some more urban legends or add anything to what Lacey told us, feel free to reach out.
Yes, please. It
You
sounded more
creep.
desperate than I thought it was gonna.
Yes,
Please interact with
please
us.
talk to me.
I was actually, I was thinking about doing the chupacabra for my third one. I didn't, as you can see, but I had
Before
one
you
there.
said that the red camel was real, I was going to ask if he was just the chupacabra. All right.
Well, that was sinister.
And we were sarcastic.
And we hope you keep listening.